Probably one of the most iconic movie scenes from history. Forrest Gump sits down after placing his son on the very same school bus with the very same school driver that he used to ride and ride with. The wind starts to blow, and a feather that had dropped out of his favorite book gets caught in the breeze, and away it goes. It's supposed to resemble life. Forrest Gump was a man that nobody expected much from. He was born with a learning disability. He was born with a back issue. He was not popular. His family was not rich, although eventually he would be. One thing he had going for him is, well, he could run like the wind blows. And during his life, he graduated college, was an All-American football player. He met three different presidents, influenced American rock and roll when he meets Elvis, went to China to play ping pong, appeared on The Tonight Show, founded a very successful shrimp company, became a celebrity by running back and forth across the nation, got married to his lifelong sweetheart, fathered a child. All was not perfect, because along the way, he was abandoned by his dad. He lost his very best friend to war. He lost his mother to cancer, and he lost his wife to AIDS. He believed in God. He went to church. He prayed. He tells his Lieutenant Dan that, well, he knows Jesus, and one day he's going to heaven. That, my friends, is what you call a full life. And given where he started, we might say he had a great life. Ironically, as you watch the movie, and if you have not seen it, then I don't know. Every time you flip through cable, it's on at least five different channels at a time, it seems like. It's been around since 2009, and the movie is all about a question. Forrest is looking for his destiny. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 3 through 11. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough seeing, nor the ear is full of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow us. This series is all about finding the meaning of life. And usually when I ask that question, the first thing that pops into my head is, what's my purpose? Maybe you're going through a really hard time and you're looking for an explanation. Something has happened and you want to know why. Perhaps life has just worn you down and you feel absolutely, positively hopeless. And as you stand there and you ask yourself about purpose, really what you want to know is, what's the point? I mean, life just kind of happens, doesn't it? You're born, you live, you die, and the next generation takes your place. The verses I read come from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 3 through 11. And I think it captures how we often feel about this thing we call life. Generations come and go. The sun rises and the sun sets. The wind blows and to the south and to the north and round it goes. Folks, I'm tired. My life is wearisome. It wears me out. And no matter how hard I try and how many banks I yell at or Verizons I yell at or whatever is going on in my life, I can never seem to get ahead. Why? Because my eyes never get enough seeing and my ears never get enough hearing. And well, sometimes I just think what I really need is just to start over. Back in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, just cutting it down to verses 9 through 11. What has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. There is no do-over? No. Is there anything which is done? You can say, look, this is something new. Don't you love those commercials where they say new and improved? What was the old? New and improved. Not really. Look, this is something new. It was here long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. The title of this sermon series is Chasing the Wind. Now, I kind of missed my on-ramp sermon. Usually we start the year off with, hey, what is our theme going to be for the year? And well, just so you know, if you read your email this week, you already heard some of this. But just so you know, our theme for this year is we are going to be spending the entire year studying what it means to be in the world, but not of the world. I say those things, and we'll get back to that sermon I was going to preach last week. It'll be back, okay? It just needs to work its way back into another sermon later on. But it will be back, and as we begin to look at this, we ask this question all the time. I live in this world. I can't help it, right? My physical address is here. But what does it mean to be of the world? So we're going to spend this year talking about this, and this whole big theme is going to start off by digging into this book that we call Ecclesiastes. The title of the series comes from the phrase right out of the book, Chasing After the Wind, which is mentioned 9 times in 12 chapters. You think he's after a point here? 9 times in 12 chapters, the writer says, Chasing After the Wind. And well, some might just think it's depressing, because guess what? At the end, it says that the teacher says, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Boy, this isn't a happy New Year kind of sermon. That sounds kind of yuck. But let's take a look at this for just a minute. Let me show you why we're starting here. Who is this fantastic teacher? Well, Ecclesiastes 1:1 says, the words of the teachers, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. So just so you know, the author never identifies himself by name. They call themselves the teacher, which actually, if you break the word down, it is the proclaimer. So some translations of scriptures translate the word preacher, because they are proclaiming something to the world. Now, the teacher does give us a hint. He also identifies himself as being the son of David. Now, just so you know, I'm not much of a genealogy kind of guy, but I do know how to read, and I know how to Google, and I know how to use BibleGateway.com, and so I went and looked it all up, and well, David had 19 sons mentioned by name in the Bible, and better his house than mine. I have 2. That's enough. 19. Could you imagine that? 19 boys. I hope he had a really big house. Because guess what? He also had 2 more sons that are mentioned, but not by name. So that means David had 21 sons that would have identified themselves as the son of King David. And a few are like, not in my lifetime. And a few of the ladies are like, not, I'm not giving birth to 21 sons. 21 sons. By the way, he had many wives to help him with the 21, okay? This wasn't all from one female, just so you know. But most scholars credit this book to the son that took over the throne from David, and his name is Solomon. This is what it says in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 24. Then David comforted his wife Bathsheba, and he went to her and made love to her. She gave birth to a son, and they named him Solomon, and the Lord loved him. Now, this is interesting because this Solomon guy, he is none other than the son of Bathsheba. Yeah, that Bathsheba. Yeah, that one from 2 Samuel chapter 11, the one that we read. Yeah, that Bathsheba. So that's mom. And well, David himself is the one that declared he's going to be the successor to the throne. And this is odd because Solomon was not the firstborn son. He was the firstborn son to Bathsheba. Well, after the other one, anyway. He was the one that came from Bathsheba, but he was not the firstborn son, so that's going to cause a little contention later in Solomon's life. But this is the one that David chose. And well, God agreed with the choice because in 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 12, this is what God says to him. I'm going to grant you, well, he didn't say wisdom. I'm going to give you anything you want. But then Solomon asked for wisdom, and God says, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never be anyone like you. Of course, God did one better. Not only did he give him wisdom, he said, guess what? King Solomon, I'm going to make you super successful. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And immediately I know what you're thinking. What's this got to do with in, not of? I'm glad you asked because I have an answer for you. Everything. It has everything to do with it because Solomon was just not some rich king that lived long ago. He's not just one for the history books. Solomon was king of God's people. So think about this for a second. That means while Israel was one nation among many on the planet, they were not the only nation. There were many other nations out there. There were all these, and they were one of many. They lived in the world. But God called them out to be his people and to be different. Therefore, while they were in the world, God called them to be not of the world. And then, and what I don't think was probably the wisest decision, but I'm not God, he gave Solomon the task of leading them. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 14 says, and if you walk in obedience to me and keep my decrees and commands as David your father did, I will give you a long life. So God says, Solomon, this is real simple. Stay between the lines, okay? I've given you the car to drive. I've given you the kingdom to run. And all I want you to do is live the example given by your father David. And when it comes to your relationship with me, just stay in your own lane, Solomon. And you're going to be the most successful king that history will ever know. Unfortunately, he failed. 1 Kings chapter 3:3 says, Solomon showed his love for the Lord by walking according to the instructions given by his father David. Oh, yay! Except that he offered sacrifices and burnt incense on the high places. Did Solomon do great things for God? Absolutely he did. The nation of Israel became wealthy and powerful under Solomon's rule. He was a great king. However, he allowed his heart to be turned. We're looking at that, and it says he worshipped other gods. Sure, he built God's temple, but he also built the temple of other gods. And well, he did learn one thing from his dad. That female problem that David had, Solomon took it to new levels. 700 wives. That doesn't count the mistress. 700 wives. Forget about 21 sons. What do you do with 700 wives? That's just crazy. But I don't want you to focus on that. I want you to focus on one word in that passage I just read you. It is the word except. See, I think as Christians, sometimes we miss this little bitty word that's in this verse. Because a lot of times when we think of live in the world, not of the world, we think that those that are living of the world, they completely have just written God off. But I want you to see something. Solomon did not all out abandon God. He didn't say, no God for me. He didn't say, Jehovah, you're crazy. I'm going to go worship Baal, and Baal is now in charge of my wife. He didn't write God off at all. But he also did not make God the priority of his life. He made God merely part of his life. Do you see why that's complicated? Go all the way back to Genesis. What's part of that thing that he said? When we're going back to Exodus, what did he tell the Israelites? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Go all the way through the scripture. He says, hey, I'm a jealous God. I'm not sharing you with anybody. And Solomon said, well, God, I'll build you a nice house. But all these other things in the world, their house won't be as nice as yours, but guess what? There's a place in my life for them too. Wow. Is God really that narrow-minded that there's no other room for anybody but him? Well, here's the thing. By the time we reach the end of his life, that kingdom that David left and that kingdom that Solomon spent his life building, well, it's going to end up as divided as Solomon's heart. And well, that's where we come in with this book of Ecclesiastes. You see, Solomon has lived his life for everything and anything. Folks, Solomon studied, worked, and yeah, he partied like there was no tomorrow. Now, Ecclesiastes, we're at the end of his life. And I almost get this picture of old man Solomon sitting there on his front porch and watching all the chariots go by, and he's sitting there with his rocking chair, and he's going back and forth and back and forth, and he's looking at his life, and he begins to ponder, and this is what he sees. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 12 through 18. I, the teacher, was over Israel, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I have seen all things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be strengthened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also to madness and folly. But I learned this too is meaningless. This too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. And I know what you're thinking. Who rained on your parade, Barry? This is depressing. This is not how I want to start my new year. Where's the horns and the confetti and the let's do that? Where's the fun sermon series? That isn't what this is about. Yes, it's depressing to think about Solomon looking back on his life and saying, it's all meaningless, but here's the thing. If you take the time to read through the book, it's also very enlightening what Solomon is now looking at. You see, because unlike Forrest, who, by the way, is coming along for the journey, okay? He's coming along to help us better understand what's going on. Unlike Forrest, who went where with, well, when the wind blew, Solomon was a man that set out on a journey. He was determined. I am going to discover the meaning of life. Okay. And in doing so, folks, he chased after many of the things that we chase after. He chased pleasure, knowledge, and understanding, and success, and legacy, and riches. Wow, I've just about outlined the American dream, haven't I? He chased all of these things, and when he was all done, he said, I have seen all things that are done under the sun, and all of them are meaningless and chasing after the wind. Solomon, you've got my attention. Because I know who chases many of those things that you chased. I know somebody that's still chasing many of the things that you chased. I know him because I live with him, and no, it's not my two sons, it's me. I find my life sometimes chasing after what Solomon called the wind. He explains what he chased and how he chased and ultimately how it did not satisfy. Now, I am going to give you a glimmer of hope, and we'll get back to this in about 6 weeks. He did actually discover the meaning of life. You find it in Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. Now, all has been heard, and here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of mankind. You know, they say wisdom is the ability to learn from somebody else's mistakes. Starting out this end, not of, that's what I want to do. I want to look at Solomon's life, and I want to find out what he chased, and I want to find out how he chased it, and then I want to look at the conclusions that he came to, and then instead of me having to go and make the same mistakes, I want to look at his life and say, well, here's a man that's smarter than me. He's wealthier than me. God blessed him. And therefore, maybe I should take a moment to say, you know what? He's already traveled this chasing path. I think I better figure out a different way to do it. I want to ask myself, what are you chasing? So you're in trouble. I'm sharing this story with Gary beforewards. Because guess what? I never wrote a conclusion to this sermon. I had intentions of writing it, and then life happened. And then I was here on Friday. I came up here. I'm like, I've got to go work on my sermon. I've got to write the conclusion. And I was working on it, and I had actually done the thing. And I was standing right here, and I'm not kidding you. I probably was standing here for 60 seconds, getting ready to start looking at this and coming up with a conclusion. And the phone rang, and it was Thomas. He needed a ride home from the hospital. So I'm like, okay, I'll get back to this conclusion later. And so I took my phone, and I had to go down to Waynesboro and swap my son's little squatty car for my truck because I didn't want to try to cram Thomas in my son's little bitty car that I had with me. And I got my truck, and I went back to the hospital, and then I started on my way home, and I had another phone call. And that was a good conversation, but you understand, it took time, and by the time I was done with everything, I looked at my clock, and I had exactly enough time to go grab a quick bite to eat and make my way over to the bank where I had to settle up some affairs. Never got back around to writing a conclusion. And then I had a phone call last night from a very dear friend. My wife arranged the phone call. She had him call me because she was worried about where I was in my state of mind with everything that's going on in my life right now. And he called, and we began to talk, and he was sharing with me some of the struggles in his life, and I was sharing with him some of the struggles in my life, the pity party thing, right? And I hung up, and I still had no conclusion to my sermon. I just had this, what are you chasing? And I'm like, I'll figure it out in the morning. Just not the morning God was thinking about. See, as 50-year-old men do, I had to get up around 5:30 this morning and take care of some things. I won't go into details. And then I came back to the bed, and I laid down on the bed, and I looked at the clock, and the clock read 5:29. Like, cool. I got about an hour and a half. I can lay my head back down here. Maybe I'll doze back off to sleep. And then it wasn't an audible voice, so I'm not having walls speak to me, okay? It was just a movement in my heart, kind of a tap on my brain. Say, hey, Barry, here's something to think about. The feather never chased the wind. it only allowed the wind to guide it. Okay, God, that sounds more like a Chinese fortune cookie than a conclusion to a sermon. But then I started thinking about it. When George Washington was chopping down cherry trees when he was little, do you think he was thinking, oh, someday I'm going to lead an army and we're going to win a revolutionary war? Do you think when he was sitting at Valley Forge in the dead of winter, it crossed his mind, someday I'm going to be president of the United States? Let's turn our attention to Scripture. Do you think when he was little and he was learning how to fish that Peter was out on the boat and one day he looked at his dad and he said, you know, Dad, someday I'm going to be the leader of the church? And you know what his dad would have said? What's the church? Because it didn't exist. Do you think the Apostle Paul, when he was there going to college and learning all of the Jews' rules and going all through the Sanhedrin and working his way, do you think he ever looked at and said, you know what, I'm doing all this so someday I can end up in prison and get executed for following a man that basically tore down Judaism? See, this is about life. And sometimes in my life, I chase. I look at it. I set out goals. When I was on the phone, Jerry asked me, what's your 5-year plan? I'm like, my gosh, I haven't figured out how I'm going to conclude my sermon yet on Sunday. 5 years? I don't have 5-year plans anymore, because every time I make a plan, God laughs at it, and basically my plan is 75 cents to buy you a pop down at Walmart. So this morning, I don't want you to ask yourself, what are you chasing? Because you'll easily be able to identify that. Here's what I want you to start off this new year asking yourself. What next? What next? Hey God, let me just test you know something. The wind is blowing and I can feel the breeze. And where I am today is not necessarily where I'm going to be 5 years from now. Where am I going to be 5 years from now? I have no clue. For all I know, this is the last sermon I'll ever preach here. And next week I'm going to be with Jesus. I'm okay with that, but all the same, I have some things I got to finish here first. Okay, I don't know what my future brings. All I know is that God is the wind that blows through my life. And the only thing I can really choose to do to live in the world and not of the world is to let go of my life and catch the breeze and go where God is leading me. How do I do that? Well, that's why you have to come back for the next 6 weeks. Because that's Solomon's lesson. How to stop chasing the wind and how to start riding the wind. That's how we begin the process of living in this world, which I can't change. But not allowing my life to get so entangled with where the wind is going that I start chasing it. And instead, pull myself back, look at my life, and just ask this simple question of God. It's a scary question, by the way. What next? Because just so you know, this wasn't part of my plan 11 years ago. When I say this, I mean here in Stanton, a small church in a small city. That wasn't part of my plan. Okay, go back before that. Ministry was never part of my plan coming out of college. Go back to that. The way that I got here, that was not part of my plan. I never planned to have a child that got sick. I never planned any of that, but all of it happened, and I can now look back at it here and look how God's wind blew my life along the path that he wanted me to. But at some point, you have to take off the running shoes and stop chasing the wind.